Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Welcome to this special edition of the Roundup. We're going to talk about the intersection of electronic health records and artificial intelligence with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and our special guest, Dr. Robert Pearl, the former CEO of the Permanente Medical Group. Dr. Pearl teaches at both the Stanford University School of Medicine and the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Dr. Pearl also published a book in 2024 entitled ChatGPT MD, How AI-Empowered Patients and Doctors Can Take Back Control of American Medicine. Dr. Pearl, welcome back to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast.
Dave and Dave, it's always a pleasure to discuss complex topics with the two of you. The one you've chosen today is fascinating. I look forward to seeing how closely our visions align.
Feelings mutual. So thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
The idea for this special episode comes from two different starting points. The first was in August 2024, when Epic, the industry's dominant EHR vendor, said it was developing and releasing more than 100 AI-powered tools for its EHR users. The second was about a year later in July 2025, when the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services unveiled its Health Tech Ecosystem Initiative. Essentially, CMS said all the health technology that healthcare providers use, including EHR systems and AI-powered tools, must be interoperable if you want to participate in Medicare and Medicaid. What's a health system executive to do? What we're going to do is comment on someone else's commentary. In the April 28th edition of JAMA, three people published their perspective on this clash between competition and regulation in a piece entitled, "The Market Dynamics for Third-Party AI Tools Trying to Compete with Electronic Health Record Developers." The authors are Julia Adler-Milstein, Dr. Sarah Murray, and Dr. Robert Wachner, all from the University of California at San Francisco. Their premise is a dominant EHR vendor like Epic, which they name by name, has an unfair advantage in market adoption of AI tools, even if their AI tools aren't as good as other AI tools from other third-party developers. Absent regulatory interventions to mitigate that advantage, AI innovation will slow and providers and patients will be the losers. I've asked each of you to read the perspective. Now I want to get your perspective. Dr. Pearl, do you agree or disagree with the premise of the article and why?
There's no question that Epic has a massive advantage by being the EHR provider. And that's not going to change. We've talked in the past about whether Epic will open their APIs for other companies. And as you may remember, I was pessimistic at the time, and I remain so today. Despite the governmental promise, the companies will do so. The authors are correct that the entrepreneurial companies move faster. However, I don't believe that the best way to implement the generative AI tool, and that's as opposed to a narrow radiologic application, is with a standalone product. In fact, I doubt that either an EHR company nor a standalone company will build products that maximally benefit patients. Entrepreneurial model is driven by profit. And that's just as true for Epic as it is for these other companies. And the tools that will be built in the future will be because the profit margins are great, not because they save the most lives. I think the future is about the broad availability of clinical solutions that rely on inexpensive, large language models, ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, and they'll be prompted by both doctors and patients. You probably saw the research that was published in Nature. It tested a large language model against OpenAI evidence, which is a narrower tool, and it found that the general tool was better in a variety of clinical tests. That's where I think the future will be centered, around the patient, not the doctor. And I think the care will move from the office to the home. But opening the APIs will still be vital to extract the information from the EHR that the LLM will need to provide optimal expertise. Using that approach, I believe we can start supporting patients in a matter of months, not years.
So follow the outcomes, don't follow the money.
Absolutely.
That's great. Thanks, Dr. Pearl. Dave, it's your turn. Do you agree or disagree with the premise of the article and why?
Well, violently agree. And first of all, the title's a showstopper, right? The market dynamics for third-party AI tools trying to compete with electronic health record developers. I mean, I'm asleep before I even get halfway through that. But
no character count limit there.
No character count, yeah. But the principal author is Julia Adler Milstein, who's Arnie Milstein's daughter. And I had a friend who was with Arnie at a wedding recently where he said his daughter has clearly eclipsed him in national importance, which is saying something. And the second lead author was Robert Wachter, the physician, MD, writer from UCSF, who just published a book called The Giant Leap. So both of these individuals deeply immersed in these topics of technology, innovation, and how to bring them to market. And you went through the genesis, but I can tell you my favorite words in this were standardization and then sandboxes. You know, so if we're going to get to where Robbie wants us to get to, which are products that generate an economic return, but they do it the old-fashioned way by creating value rather than just exploiting perverse payment incentives, then we need greenfield competition. We need to have the best ideas triumph. We need the opportunity for companies to come in and take their shot at improving healthcare. Now, big picture, where I think this is going, and Robbie, I really liked your observation about large language models, but I just wrote a piece called The Biology of AI, which published in HFM magazine. And the title's preposterous, right? Because AI doesn't have biology. You get below its quote-unquote skin and you get numeric code. And yet the evolutionary character of how it evolves and solves problems, I think, mimics nature. In nature, we've got DNA and it can be reconfigured over time to do anything. Give birds wings, give human beings opposable thumbs, give dolphins fins. And I've started to think about these large language models in the same way, except my cheeky term is DMA, data model action. But if you've got the stack, which is the unified underlying data on which these large language models, and in many cases, small language models that are targeted, can hoover up this information, run algorithms on it, gain insights, and those can be translated into applications, agents that interact with end users, and increasingly autonomous actions in a controlled way that machines can do and relieve human beings of the responsibility. So the way we get there, though, is by confronting the monopoly that is Epic. And, you know, Dave, you mentioned two things. You left out that they also announced that they were going into the ERP space. Hello, Oracle.
Right, right.
And, you know, talk about global domination. And right now, in many ways, at least from the health system perspective, transformation moves at the speed of Epic's development. And they're slow. You're always kind of waiting for their next thing. And as the authors point out, rarely does a market leader become the source of real innovation. It's part of the reason in the pharmaceutical industry that the big pharma companies have essentially outsourced drug development to smaller companies and then they purchase them. So we've got some wood to chop in terms of getting our regulatory structure in place to allow the right type of greenfield development to let innovation thrive. So that's there. But where I think this all ends up is we've got this array of point solutions for just about everything. And I believe ultimately they're going to get subsumed into these platform models that have this organic biological ability to solve problems along the way I was describing earlier.
That's a good lead into our next question, and we've got some wood to chop here. I guess interoperability would be the log, right? So here's question number two for both of you. How does CMS's interoperability requirement impact the market dilemma described in the article. Dr. Pearl, you go first. What do you think?
Dave, as I just said, access to the EHR's APIs is the key to maximizing innovation in the application of generative AI for patient benefit. That's true for interoperability and for dozens of future AI applications. And the requirement for companies to do so, it's been in place for a while, and yet we've seen very little progress relative to Epic. To me, Epic is the key to unlocking medicine's data future, but I don't see how the company's current resistance will ever disappear. And without having Epic as part of the interoperability solution, and so far they've not been willing to go along, it's a little bit like announcing you've created a union of all of the basketball, professional basketball teams in the world, except the NBA. You can't do it. It's almost irrelevant. You know, to me, the issues of interoperability and generative AI, it's just two sides of the same coin. Epic knows that once people can extract data, they can easily transition from Epic to other less expensive EHR vendors. And innovative companies can create inexpensive, powerful applications that won't be under Epic's control. And doctors and patients could actually use vibe coding to create tools based on their personal preferences. All these things are good things once the APIs are open, which is why I doubt that Epic will do it. It would erode their market share and erode their bottom line. To me, if you force Epic to open its APIs, and our nation can save tens of thousands of lives and hundreds of billions of dollars a year, the opportunity to combine interoperability and generative AI are massive, but don't hold your breath until Epic goes along.
That's great. Thanks, Dr. Pearl. Dave, Epic and interoperability, right? Don't mix, don't hold your breath. And yeah, what do you think about Epic using its market power to force adoption of these AI tools that it's developing?
I mentioned before the stack, right? Data, intelligence platform, applications. And the challenge with Epic, or the trouble with Epic, is they want to be all three, and they're using their market position to try to be all three, and they're not very good really at any of them. What they should be is an instrumental part of the data layer, that, you know, unified infrastructure that can do the things that Robbie talked about doing. You know, I was in San Francisco, and I always enjoy going to San Francisco. Robbie, you see this all the time because you're out there, but it's the best billboards in the country. I saw one, you know, are you suffering from AI anxiety? They had a hotline. But there was another one, a big one on the road downtown from the airport, which said, no AI without APIs, which I thought, you know, sort of succinctly, you know, summarizes what you were just mentioning. But Robbie, I couldn't agree with you more. Why would a monopolist ever give up their monopoly position willingly?
Well, first of all, those are some sophisticated billboards.
Yes, they are.
Right. I think, you know, here in Chicago, we have, you know, something on Italian beef. I guess you got to know your audience.
Well,
right?
Dave, when we drive to Michigan, Terry and I have a running count. Which billboards are restaurants? Which ones are for cannabis? And which ones are for personal injury attorneys? And those are the dominant ones.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right, last question for both of you. And Dave, you provided the perfect lead into this. You know, if we're not going to do some sort of regulatory intervention to stop Epic from slowing AI innovation in healthcare, who's our white knight here? Patients, providers, consumer-facing tech companies? What do you think, Dr. Pearl? I think you hinted at that in your first answer. What do you think?
Well, first, before I get to that, I want to piggyback a little bit on what Dave just said. I do want to applaud Epic for the fact that they were the first company to recognize that you have to have integration of all of the pieces, and you can't do that when you have dozens of point solutions.
Yep.
And so, you know, as a Permanente, we spent $1 billion trying to build our own EHR before Epic. And we failed. And then we spent another $1 billion with IBM trying to build one. And we failed. And we failed because we created, again, lots of very excellent point solutions that just didn't fully integrate. And we moved to Epic. It was a major advance. I want to give Judith and the company some kudos around that. But I think that day has passed. As I mentioned, I think the big innovation is going to be the application of LLMs. We're talking about ChatGPT, Claude, and Gemini, that will be prompted by both doctors and patients. And I'm hopeful that what the entrepreneurial companies will do, call them the white knights if you want, is to create the tools that will allow patients, because doctors know how to do it, but allow patients to be able to access this information in a very secure and reliable type way, 24/7. And in doing so, they'll all be able to better manage their chronic diseases. They'll be able to identify diagnoses and treatments that are missed today. You know, for listeners, they should remember that we have 400,000 people who die annually from misdiagnoses. And we have over 500,000 who die because of poorly controlled chronic diseases for which we have effective medications. We know what to do. And according to the CDC, if we could control these chronic diseases, that we would not only save hundreds of thousands of lives by preventing heart attacks and strokes and cancers and kidney failures, but we also would save probably close to $1 trillion. I think it's a much better way to reduce costs than with prior authorization and restrictions and all the other things that are being talked about today. You know, when I look at the marketplace, I can see some potential white knights. It could be entrepreneurial companies. The problem is there's not a lot of margin in being able to develop simply a tool for a patient to use, the LLM, that they probably already have in their house. And I also could see how clinicians could lead it, particularly with the advances in vibe coding that allow these applications to be created at relatively low cost. But if I were the president of the United States, I'd ask the NIH to lead the way, and I'd have the esteemed agency develop these tools and make them available to all 330 million Americans.
Taking an altruistic approach there. Dave, what do you think? Who's coming to the rescue of AI innovation if the government doesn't step in? Who are your white knights?
So it's a really good question. And I just want to say Robbie's right. Epic was the first really to figure out how to put all of that together. And Robbie, it sounds like you were there, but it was really Kaiser's decision to purchase Epic for the electronic.
No, actually, Dave, I'll interrupt you because it was very much myself working with George Halverson, and I was helping to lead the entire way around that. And I did come in after the $2 billion failures, so I don't want to be totally blamed for that. And actually, a physician in the Northwest, Homer Chen, was the one who first brought Epic into place, and he was using it in a very small module, and we leveraged off of that experience to then make that decision along with the health plan to purchase, actually to develop the system. The whole inpatient side was developed by Kaiser Permanente.
Yeah, no, it put Epic on the map. That was the, if I were to point to any one event, that was probably the one that catapulted Epic into its leadership status. And, you know, Judy, a pretty strong-willed person, Kaiser wanted to own a piece of Epic, and she said no. And Kaiser went ahead with the purchase anyways, you know. So in some ways, you got to admire that. But my worry today is the Judy Faulkner of today would crush the Judy Faulkner of 50 years ago who invented Epic in her basement, right? And, you know, the software itself is, it's one big database, which is part of the reason Epic can combine everything, but it runs on mumps, which is very transactionally oriented. So it's very good going up and down the tree. It's not as good going across trees, which is part of the reason it takes so long to develop the new applications. But in terms of the white knight, I mean, Robbie and I are both, you know, we believe in markets. And my biggest frustration is that the purchasers of healthcare, self-insured employers, and governments are largely paying premium prices for commodity services. I mean, the types of advances that Robbie was talking about are cheaper, better, faster. I mean, the key to a more prosperous, productive, happier America is investing more in our health so we don't have to spend as much on healthcare. And technology is the way that we're ultimately going to get there. But if I had to pin my hope in one place, it will be that the tech will get to a place sooner rather than later that enables the buyers of healthcare services to get more value for their purchasing. And that will enable the marketplace to do what it hasn't been able to do up to this point, And if the government goes along and creates the regulatory environment to speed this, it can happen very quickly. I mean, the challenges confronting making the healthcare system more productive, more equitable, more cost-effective are political. They aren't technical. So either the marketplace is going to eventually get us there, or it will get us there faster if the government helps create the competitive environment that stimulates the type of innovation we've been talking about.
All right. That's the right way to use regulation. Thanks, Dave. Okay, why don't we wrap things up with one final comment from each of you? Now, a year from now, where are we with this market dilemma that we've been talking about today? Dr. Pearl, what do you think? What are we talking about 12 months from now?
Well, in my monthly musings that I published for the month of July, I talk about why the future is really going to be through these large language models, that people are just not going to be willing to spend the cost of buying a very specialized one, particularly after that article came out in Nature about the large language models being not just as good, but actually in many cases better than the very narrow point type solutions. Looking to a year out from now, I don't see any way that Epic is going to alter its course and agree to open its APIs to allow interoperability. Medical control has been the basis for profit generation in healthcare, as David said earlier. Regardless of whether we're talking about the pharmaceutical industry, the hospital industry, or the EHR world. And if nothing happens to force Epic, and I'm hoping that the government might step in to open its APIs, why do we think that next year will be any different than the previous 20 years? You know, Judith's become the richest entrepreneur woman in the nation because she's super smart and super strategic. I mean, the decisions she's made are the ones that are best for Epic. My problem is that I don't think they're the best for the American populace. I don't like her strategy any more than you do, but I think that that's the reality of American medicine, at least for now. But at the same time, I'm optimistic about the future. And I believe that within a couple of years, maybe by a year from now, we will have harnessed the power of generative AI. You know, we're already seeing 65% of doctors using a generative AI tool for medical expertise on a consistent basis, and 40% of patients are already consulting a large language model before they visit a doctor. With access to care in the United States becoming harder, with half of the nation unable to afford their out-of-pocket costs, and at least 500,000 people dying annually from medical problems that could be prevented, the opportunities that I see are massive. I think the era of the EHR as the driver of medical progress, that era is past. The era of generative AI as the driver of healthcare is the one that's arriving. And I'm certain that together, dedicated clinicians and empowered patients and generative AI will accomplish exponentially more than any of the three and achieve exponentially better clinical outcomes than any of the three are capable of.
Who among us hasn't looked up symptoms right now? That's almost a standard practice. So that's excellent. Thanks, Dr. Pearl. Dave, what's our conversation a year from now? And what do you think of how Dr. Pearl answered that question?
I loved how Robbie answered that question. I'm a pretty good nonlinear thinker, I think, to pat myself on the back. But I'm having trouble wrapping my head around how quickly the large language models are progressing. I mean, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have used Claude to organize a podcast, and now you've got Anthropic breaking up with the Defense Department over who gets to set guardrails for autonomous killing machines. It's happening with remarkable speed. And I think the only thing I can think of that's equivalent in modern history is the advent of electricity. And that took much longer to develop and put its stamp on the economy than this happening with AI broadly a year from now. So I'm on a crusade, Dave, as you know, to encourage people to hold two contradictory thoughts in their mind at the same time. The first is that AI is increasing healthcare costs. Been a lot written about that lately. David Brailer had a piece that talked about how the various parts of the healthcare ecosystem are using AI to optimize their advantage, and that is putting demonstrable upward pressure on medical inflation. And part of the reason medical inflation is now roaring again after it had been quiescent for almost a decade. So that's a reality. But the second one, to get to where most of our conversation is AI has the potential and is increasingly demonstrating how it can dramatically reduce healthcare costs in ways that improve outcomes and improve health, improve customer experience. So both these things are going on. And the real question is, on a relative basis, how quickly do these trends move? And right now, I'd have to say that the forces of darkness are probably got a little bit of the upper hand in using AI for their evil purposes, but that the forces of light longer term through all of us are realizing the potential of these tools and will ultimately force the system what it should have been doing all along, which is delivering the best health and healthcare possible for all of the American people. And we spend twice as much per capita as most other advanced nations on healthcare, and they achieve better health outcomes than we do, and they're far from efficient. But imagine a United States where the rest of the world is getting more expensive and we're getting less expensive because we isolate and throw the American innovation engine at this challenge in ways that really do focus on driving better outcomes, lower costs, better customer experience. We could go from being a laggard to being a leader in the global healthcare environment. And a year from now, will that be the case? Probably not. But I bet we're having a more detailed conversation about the relative trade-offs of who's winning and who's losing than we're having today. And it's a lot better today than it was a year ago. So forward.
Dr. Pearl, what do you think of that idea that Dave's floating here, that AI can increase costs and AI can lower costs? Can you handle both those in your head? I'm not sure I can right now. What do you think?
Well, I can because there's a factor called the human.
Okay.
Which is how do you use it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like asking, well, a bomb can explode and kill people. It also can provide energy for an entire generation and global warming. Yeah, I can hold them both because there's another factor besides simply the AI itself. Right now, application of AI to, in quotes, earn more money by battling the insurance company or making prior authorization even more rigid. Yeah, those are the things that are happening, but they're not AI directed. It's directed by the humans that are sitting back behind it. You know, again, if I had to leave listeners with one vision, think about a world, and this is CDC data, that generative AI tools were used to better control chronic disease with a 30 to 50% fewer heart attack, strokes, kidney failures, and cancers. What would that world look like? A trillion less, fewer dollars being spent on healthcare, at least healthcare as we know it today, and being able to use for a variety of social determinants of health or whatever other application we would want. Imagine the lives saved and the parents and grandparents who would still be alive. I can have a very beautiful vision of that, but it's going to require that we apply it differently. And to do that, I think that we're going to have to shift a variety of parts of current care delivery. We're going to need to shift the financing. We're going to need to shift the culture. We're going to need to shift where care is delivered. We're going to have to move from a fragmented calendar-based method of taking care of patients to one that's continuous in the home. There's a lot of evolution that has to happen, and that'll be based upon humans. So I think, you know, what I would say is it's not two simultaneously, it's two alternative paths. One is going to lead us to simply have a lot more of the same today, a lot more volume, a lot more intensity, higher costs without any major change in outcomes. The other has the possibility of actually moving from a sick care system to a healthcare system. I'm a believer in the latter because I think that with a generative AI tool, it won't be up to the businesses to decide how it's used. That's why I talked about the fact that 40% of patients are already using it. Soon it'll be 50, 60, 70. Soon it'll be the way that people get care. You know, if you have to wait 3 weeks to see a doctor, are you going to ignore your problem for 3 weeks? I don't think so. I think people are going to go there. But in the end, the determinant of whether it's used for good or to continue the problems of today will be human. I'm much better at predicting technology than I am predicting people's behavior.
Well, if your vision comes true, it'll be a lot easier for me to get a parking spot at the outpatient care pavilion at our local hospital, right?
Absolutely.
All the time I spend circling that lot looking for a spot.
You won't even have to go anymore, Dave.
There you go. Even better. Even better.
And when you go to the ER, the waiting area will be empty.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks, Dr. Pearl, and thanks, Dave. This has been a great conversation. And again, Dr. Pearl, thank you for joining us again today on the Roundup.
It's always so much fun. Thank you for having me.
And that is all the time we have for today.